What do you do when you're desperate for something? What is the best way to get what you need or go after what you want? Now, we have all likely been desperate in our lives. We've had moments or seasons where we have these deep, overwhelming needs or cravings. And our culture says, go get what you want. Don't sit around complaining. Make it happen. Do what you need to do. And there's this implication that it's okay to do pretty much anything to get what you think you're entitled to or get what you want at the expense of others. Is this how God's people should go about getting what we need or what we want? Or is there another way for us besides steamrolling others or disregarding others? Is there a more graceful way that both honors our desires, honors God, and respects others? Today we're going to study a prayer that will serve as a helpful model of how to pray for our greatest desire. Now that greatest desire can change from maybe sometimes day to day, or year to year, or season to season. So let's read together 1 Samuel 1, verses 1 through 20. I'm going to cut out the town names at the beginning because, you know, a little irrelevant to what we need to learn today. There was a certain man, whose name was Elkanah, He had two wives. One was called Hannah and the other called Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. And whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. And in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow saying, "Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him." And she said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." Now, I don't know about you, but as a woman, I have deep sympathy for Hannah in her desperate situation. Many of us have our own stories of infertility or miscarriage, or that story is not too far from us. And those things pull at our hearts, and we have deep compassion or even pain in this area. And the temptation is that Hannah's desperate circumstances will distract us today from our primary task, which is to study prayer. So I'm not using this teaching to help us understand infertility, explained or unexplained, barrenness, why God gifts miracle children to some people and not others. I'm not going to take on those theological questions, though they are deep and valid and very personal to some of us. Today, our primary task is to look at Hannah's circumstances to understand her great desire and how she approached the Lord in prayer. So I don't want any of you to feel that I would be minimizing your experience, past or present, but we have a purpose to study prayer today, and I wanted to go to Hannah's story because you can feel how deep this desire is for her, right? But we are going to focus on how she responds and approaches the Lord in the midst of her circumstances. So let's just kind of review, like, pare down what her circumstances are. Hannah is a married woman, and she is beloved by her husband. And that's a great thing to be. But in their culture, she has a disadvantage because she's childless. And that was a huge thing of shame. It also affected, you know, probably how she was treated by family, friends, neighbors, and just society in general. Now, she is also married to a man who has another wife. And this Penina, it says that she likely had many children because the phrase in verse 4, all her sons and daughters, sounds like a good gaggle of kids, right? And so if that would be hard enough, I think, if you were barren and your husband had another wife and she had a ton of kids. That would hurt enough, I think. But then Penina is not a kind person. And she actually uses these circumstances to pick at and irritate Hannah. So that, I think, just makes it so much harder for Hannah. It says that Penina tried to grievously irritate Hannah in verse 6. And she provoked her. It says, as often as Hannah would go up to the house of the Lord, which implies that Hannah is going regularly to pray, and every time she would do that, Penina would just peck at her. Now, Elkanah, her husband, doesn't seem to get how this impacts Hannah. He says, why do you weep? Why is your heart sad? In verse 8, and I just want to smack him upside the head. Like, come on, just a basic level of sensitivity, please. I'm not saying that all men are insensitive, but this guy has some issues, right? And it's great that he loves his wife, but hello, wake up. He thinks that his love for her and the way he blesses her should just fully satisfy her. But it doesn't matter. Sometimes you can be well loved by a spouse or family or friends, and you can still have a dissatisfaction or a desire for something else. And that doesn't make you less of a person. But sometimes it makes you unseen by others. So what does this do to Hannah's emotional state? We have all kinds of evidence of this. There's much weeping, it says in verses 7, 8, and 10. She has a loss of appetite. Now, gosh, when you're depressed, you're really upset about something, that can actually affect you physically. This could also be her choosing to fast. It doesn't explicitly say that, but that could indicate that she was doing that as a spiritual practice. And it uses adjectives and describes her sad heart in verse 8, deep anguish and bitter weeping in verse 10. But the strange thing about this story is we actually don't know what Hannah's motivations are. We don't see into her heart. We have some maybe assumptions, but what really is the cause of her weeping? It's probably a combination of factors, but is it simply that she's barren and she wants a child? Is it exacerbated because she's jealous of Penina, her husband's other wife who has this gaggle of children? Is that compounded by how Penina is treating her? Or is it just a jumble of all of these things? We don't really know. We don't have the words of her heart until she prays. But I want us to look at Hannah as a model of how we can pray for our greatest desire. And it doesn't matter what that desire is particularly, but let's look at what Hannah does as an example, a model of praying for our greatest desire. So first, when I look at Hannah, I see endurance and persistence in prayer. Despite her great pain, Hannah continued to go to the Lord. It says both to the house of the Lord year after year, year after year, verses 7 and 9. It says that she went to the Lord in prayer in verse 10, and that she kept on praying to the Lord even after her vow in verse 12. She's persistent. Hannah didn't abandon her faith or her God in the long waiting period until she had what she'd prayed for in front of her. She stuck with the Lord. And I have seen so many of my friends over the years in difficulty, people of faith who face significant challenges. I'm not diminishing or minimizing their challenges, and wanting something. Usually, they want something, they also want an answer for God, for why don't I have this? And the longer that goes on, and if there's no answer, I've seen one after another, my friends walk away from the Lord because they have this deep longing and they have no answers. If there were answers, they might stick around, I think, because it would make sense of what they're going through. But Hannah is an example of sticking with the Lord. I also see Hannah as an example because of her emotional honesty, both in her prayer and in her life. I mean, just this is the little snapshot we have of her life, but look at her honesty, her emotional rawness. She is had this deep anguish. She wept bitterly. She called herself deeply troubled. She named her great anguish. She called it grief. Hannah did not try to clean herself up emotionally. She just let herself be a mess because that's where she was. You know, I think we so often try to clean ourselves up so that we will somehow be more presentable or more worthy of the request we're going to make. Like, we're not allowed to be a mess when life is a mess if we're going to approach God. We're going to ask for something. I see that over and over and over. Hannah comes to God as she is, in her desperation, perhaps her depression, and she names it before God. I mean, just think about her. When I hear all the descriptors of her emotional state, I picture a woman who's crying so hard that her nose is running. Have you ever cried that hard? Where just like your face gets blotchy, you swell up, your nose is running. It's just a mess. That's how I picture Hannah. Year after year, she gets to this place where she just is done. She's a mess. And yet she's not trying. How many times do I sit with women in counseling sessions and they're crying and they can't stop apologizing to me that they're crying? I don't care if you cry. If that's what's going on in your soul, let it loose, right? But we also often apologize for our emotions as though they're somehow unacceptable or somehow disqualifies what's happening inside of us. She was such a mess that Eli thought she was drunk. And then he says so, right? And she doesn't apologize. She corrects him. She stands up for herself. And she says, these are my circumstances, and this is what I'm doing. She's not, oh, I'm so sorry. No. She's not defensive. She just says, this is who I am. This is the way I am. Kind of just take it or leave. It's just, you know, I love that. She spoke of her pain in raw terms. Look upon your servant's misery. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Here he's accusing her of being drunk and drinking too much, taking too much in. And she says, no, what you're seeing is me pouring things out. I'm overflowing with emotion. I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's something that calls us to allow ourselves to be humans who are at times emotive. I can't tell you how many times I work in a field, as you know, that is dominated by men. I believe that as we are all created in the image of God, we all have human emotions, that these are a gift of God. And I tell you, throughout the years working in ministry, I work with great men, but there's sometimes this subtle thing where if I'm crying about something, it's just me being emotional or hormonal, rather than me actually experiencing pain. And so I allow myself to cry in meetings because that is just me honoring what's happening inside of me, right? Allowing myself to express and experience the emotions that I'm experiencing because of life circumstances. And I have taught myself, it took about 5 years, to stop apologizing when I cried. And now I just let it out there. And I can't change how people perceive me when this happens, but I have to let go of caring how they perceive me. I'm just gonna be the human I am right here, right now, with what I experience. And I think Hannah also calls us to that. She just lets it all out. This is who I am. These are my circumstances. Deal with it. Another way she's an example for us is that she presents a plain and bold request. All we hear really of her prayer is in verse 11, and it's simple and it's short. This is not a 10-minute dialogue, that monologue that she goes on before God. It's one sentence, and it has within it kind of a progressive request. See my pain. Remember me, give me a son. See my pain, remember me, give me a son. Now, there is boldness in this phrase, remember me. To remember in the Old Testament is a powerful thing. It's not the opposite of forget, like we know those two words in English, to remember and to forget. When God remembered things in the Old Testament, he acted mightily on his people's behalf. Often, his acts on his people's behalf were miracles. So Hannah asking the Lord, remember me? This is not just, I'm sitting here and I feel like you forgot about me. It's saying, do something for me. Let me give you some examples. Genesis 8:1, God remembered Noah in the ark and caused the flood to stop. Genesis 30:22, God remembered Rachel, another barren woman, and he opened her womb to conceive, a miracle. Exodus 2:24, God heard the Hebrew slaves groaning, and he remembered them by rescuing them from slavery. Numbers 10:9, God remembered the vulnerability of his people who were facing a great army that they could never defeat. And God remembered them and gave them the victory. Judges 16:28, God remembered Samson and enabled him to knock down a building with his bare hands. Hannah is not asking for God to pity her or to just, God, keep thinking of me. That's not what she's asking for when she says, remember me. She is asking for God to act. And she knows that she is asking God for a miracle. I think she knows after year after year after year of infertility that it's gonna take a miracle for her to have a child. And so she boldly asks for God to do a miracle, and she asks for a son. And she's asking for an heir. So she's not saying, there's no concession here. Even if you'll just give me a child, she's asking for an heir of God. Hannah is bold. And the last thing I think she's a model for us is that once Hannah has prayed, she moves forward. She prayed to the Lord, she spoke to Eli, and then it says she went on her way in verse 17. She ate something. Her face was no longer downcast. The next day, she went and worshiped. Hannah, I think, is able to place this prayer in front of God and move forward because she trusts that God can do what she's asked him to do. And I think we see that because she calls him the Lord Almighty in verse 11. God has all power, and she's claiming that. And so she lays this request before him, and as maybe she has still doubts, but she just walks in confidence. She knows God's able to do this miracle. Now that's, I think, extremely hard to keep moving forward. Things like this, when we are desperate for things, you know, that raw, I don't know how I can go on without this. It's so easy to succumb to that and to fall into depression or go into downward spirals. And Hannah, I think, gives us a model of, okay, this is still with me. I'm still in pain. I still want this, but I'm going to go and worship the Lord. I'm gonna keep going before the Lord. I'm going to move. I'm going to eat. I'm going to try to hope that something will happen. And so can we follow Hannah's example when we have a great need, a great desire? Can we endure and persist in prayer? Can we be emotionally transparent with the Lord and with others? Not making excuses, but just putting it out there and saying, this is real, this is who I am right now. And I don't have to make excuses, but I don't have to justify it. Can we make plain and bold requests of God and then wait, sometimes for years? And can we move forward and trust? Can we find a way to go through the day-to-day as we wait? That's, I think, the story of Hannah, how those questions that it calls to us. So what is your greatest desire? I had you tackle that a little bit, trying to figure out. I mean, you might have 6 great desires, and then I forced you to choose one to pray for. Good luck. So how, when you think about your life and your great desires and how you've prayed in the past and how you might pray now, how is Hannah's prayer different from how you've prayed? Is there something that you can learn from her? And then, of course, there are all these deep spiritual questions that come out of this passage. Why did she have to wait so long? And sometimes I get mad because Scripture gives us stories where God shows up and does miracles, but it doesn't often record the stories of unanswered things, things that we don't ever realize that we deeply want. And I can't explain that, but those we sit with, and they can be really hard. And so I think Hannah's story, for some, just feels bitter because Hannah got what she prayed for, and you might be praying for something and you have not got it. And that's really hard. And that's why we need to care for one another well. We need to be safe people who someone can just dump what they're feeling and be honest and raw. And we can't fix it for them, so let's not pretend that we can fix it. But we can listen well, and we can care for people well, and we can say, I see that pain, and that sounds really hard. How can I care for you? How can I walk alongside you? Right? We don't have to come up with theological answers for people, but we can come alongside them and befriend them and care for them. So those are the things that we have before us. I want to send you to your small groups so that you can discuss this, but hold on just one moment and I will dismiss you in a particular way.